Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. Here we are on a Saturday morning recording again with our friend Keith at Bull Scripted. And this, needless to say, this hasn't been a really good week for the beloved Bull. Keith, I don't know about you, but I can't take many more games, many more viewing experiences like I've had the last few games, especially that game against Golden State. What an utter disappointment.
Currently in the top spot, building a nice little loss cushion before Levine gets back. Mid to late December isn't the worst thing. Yeah, it's painful. It sucks. Only competing for half a game and then, you know, pretty much just garbage minutes after a team like Golden State gets going in the third there. But it's what we want. You know, this is what we signed up for. We knew it was going to be rough. We didn't know it was going to be this rough. Well, maybe we did, but it's serving a purpose. It sucks, but it's serving a purpose.
No, agreed. I agree with you there. I understand, you know, it's we need to be losing these games. We need to get as close to that number one spot as possible in terms of getting, you know, the most opportunity to get a top number one overall pick. But you'd like to see them remain competitive, and they just haven't really been, to me, competitive at all, especially in the second half. And I can't really put my finger on what it is. What do you feel the biggest reason is for their disappointing failures down the stretch?
I think it has a lot to do with we are still finding a consistent starting lineup that we want. We found a lineup that worked on both ends with Nwaba in there, and then he went down because prior to his injury, you know, we were trending up in a ways, at least in the competitive standpoint. We were at least in games. In the beginning part of the season here, they weren't, you know, 40-point blowouts. And if they were, it was in the fourth quarter, which is what we want. Three quarters of competitive ball and then just blow it in the fourth. And, I mean, I'm sure a lot of it is social media. All the players know what the fans want. They know what the buzz around the team is. And obviously it's their job to kind of tune that out, focus on the objective of improving. But once you get into those third and fourth quarters, it's hard to get that spark. You know, even Rolo, he's kind of just like running a track meet. He just runs down there, kind of looks around at the end of the game, and he's like, yeah, well, doesn't matter. Let's run back. Somebody's about to jack up a three-point shot again. So I think it's showing us Fred isn't going to be here next year.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, I've soured on him. I think he's I mean, I've said this before on the podcast. When you have a team that's as young as this and you get so many bad calls from the officials because, for whatever reason, NBA favorites the stars and, you know, and you get a free and you get it just – you got to protect your players. Your players will stop believing in you if you're not going to fight for them. And there are so many atrocious calls I see during a Bulls game and he doesn't say anything. He doesn't say a word. And, you know, to his credit, I there were many things I didn't like about Tom Thibodeau, but that was one thing I loved was – he was constantly on the officials, and I think that eventually does have a factor. It does occasionally give you a few more free throw trips, and it's something that you need to do because if you're just going to let them call it the way they want, it, just human nature is I'll go with the guy who's going to give me less grief. I mean, I'll go.
Oh, well, no, yeah. If you're a pushover in anything, you're going to get taken advantage of. But the thing is, Fred is still considered a rookie coach. He gets just as much respect as the players do, but I completely agree. I think he does need to step up and even get himself thrown out of a game. You know, if they have that little respect for him, we're going to lose the game anyway. You got to show your guys that you're willing to get thrown out of that game, and I know some people feel that logic is stupid, but in a situation like this where you have a bunch of young guys, you need your coach to show that he's willing to go to bat for you, you know, that he's willing to catch a fine or he's willing – to get ejected from the game. You do need that. So I completely agree there, but I don't think his system's going to work. Going into the year, I really thought, you know, a group of young guys would be his niche. I understood why he couldn't get through to the egos of Butler and Rondo and Wade. You know, he played in the league recently. They're like, who the hell is this guy? He doesn't know anything. He hasn't won anything. Why are we going to listen to this guy?
That's exactly right. Exactly right. And what about the list I put together is what the go forward list of the guys on the team on the roster is currently constituted that I want to see on the next Bulls playoff team, or I think that will be on the next Bulls playoff team. And right now it's getting pretty small. I mean, right now I have, let's see, Chris Dunn. I've got Markkanen. I've got Valentine. I've got Levine. And then I have David Nwaba. And that's it. I kicked off Portis. I'm tired of Portis and watching his game. I think at best he'll max out as a 10th guy. Plays no defense. He's horrific on the defensive end, and he's not good enough offensively to compensate for that. What do you think? What's your go forward list? And are there guys that were on it or potentially on it that you've jettisoned off it in the last few weeks?
I don't think Bobby's going to be here for a championship team. I do think he'll be here through the remainder of his rookie deal, as he still is, probably in the top five youngest players on our team. He is a homegrown pick. He has showed offensive potential, like you said, as a 10th man or even as a 13th guy on the bench. If somebody goes down, if he's not going to ask for too much money, having somebody like Bobby around isn't a bad thing, because he can bring you a spark of 20 points, 10 rebounds off the bench in a game if somebody else is really struggling. Obviously, those nights are far and few in between, but no, I'd say your list is pretty much dead on. The three players that we acquired from Minnesota, Dunn, Levine, Markkanen, I haven't given up on Valentine yet. I think he, with the more better players that you put around him, the better he is going to be. He is a very good complementary player. He's showing aggressiveness on defense, at least. He's not always in the right position, and obviously he's not the most athletic, but he does come up with some sneaky steals. And you can't deny he's shooting over 40% from three. So having a shooter like him that has the playmaking ability is definitely a value in this league.
No, agreed. How about Felicio? Do you think he's going to be on the next playoff team? And I usually am one of the few people alone on an island defending John Paxson. I don't know about Gar Foreman, but definitely John Paxson and the decisions he's made overall over the last, since he's been running things, or 2003. But this one is really harder and harder to defend because this guy sucks. And he brings nothing offensively, and he's overrated defensively, and he's a fouling machine. And you'd like to see some progress from this guy. I think he's regressed. I think he's worse than he was. And I just laugh in retrospect at all the Bulls fans who are saying, Felicio should be starting ahead of Pau Gasol. Felicio's not even, he shouldn't even be able to tie his shoes, Gasol's shoes. You can't even mention him in the same sentence. Gasol developed as a player, developed a three-point shot. He's one of the better three-point shooters in the league. Look at the stats over the last 2 years. What has Felicio developed? Nothing. The guy sucks. What's your take on Felicio?
My take on Felicio is the same thing it's been since the beginning. I never saw any potential in him. My theory on it is there is plenty of 6'9", 6'10", guys that are either in college or in the G League that can run the floor and do absolutely everything Felicio does. I did not want to re-sign him at all, and if we were going to re-sign him, I expected it to be another prove-it deal. But for the reason that you just said of the fan base crying their love for El Toro here, the Bulls, he's the only player that's on the team as long as Markkanen. When you look at our cap sheet, after next year, everything pretty much falls off except for Felicio. So in that regard, it's not horrible because our cap space is still going to be huge. I don't think Felicio will be here. I'm sure it's going to be another situation where they're going to be paying money out of their pocket to make him disappear. I don't think they'll do that next year. They'll probably, keep him around next year, take another $8 million off of there, and then bargain his last $15 million with him and get him off the team. That's the only thing that I see happening. Felicio is not going to improve. He is clueless at all things. His awareness is just horrible. And he's 26 years old. So the age factor isn't on his side. I really didn't understand it. I liked even Brema, who was on our summer league team, 20-year-old kid, 7 foot, very, very, very raw, but his defensive timing on blocks was excellent. I liked that potential out of him more than I liked Felicio. I also liked the potential of Diamond Stone more than Felicio. Diamond Stone needs some conditioning and some confidence boosters, but he can actually shoot a three. He doesn't panic when he gets the ball. He has a post move. He has a mid-range game. And he's not 6'9 with T-Rex arms. And he's 20 years old. So, you know, that kind of stuff really does blow my mind. But Felicio's our tank commander. He's guaranteed to have a negative plus minus over the amount of minutes that he plays. And I guess that's beneficial this year.
Yeah, I saw Diamond Stone in person a few weeks back, up close and in person. I got to tell you, I wasn't that impressed. I don't think he's the answer. I don't think he's athletic.
Oh, I'm not saying he's the answer. I'm just saying he's better than Felicio.
I'll buy that 100%. He's better than Felicio. You know, I think sometimes some teams get in this, it's hard to describe, but some kind of mindset that they have to have a guy to play this position. They have to have a guy to play this position. Instead of necessarily, I'm always for going for a guy who's 6'9 and better than finding a center who sucks, you know? And I think the Bulls have been guilty of that sometimes in trying to find, you know, a guy to play a certain position, even though he's technically a center, but he's not as good as another power forward, instead of just having three or four power forwards on the roster and trying to figure that out, you know? I think the Bulls have been guilty of that in the past, and I don't understand what they were thinking when they said, we're going to give this guy a contract and keep him here, other than here's a guy we discovered out of nowhere, and we're going to justify it a little bit and tell everyone how great a find this was by giving him a deal, when he's not good. He's just not. And, you know, the Bulls would have been far better off finding somebody, like you said. You gave him a couple great options there instead of giving this guy $9 million. And not a lot of people were upset at the time, because I think there's a undercurrent of Felicio fans for whatever reason.
Oh, no, there is. That was the funniest part about the situation that I bring up when people talk about Bell. And it's like, you know what? I wanted to take the 38th pick originally. I wanted to draft a big guy, Kuzma or Bolden, in that position. But everybody wanted Felicio. Two small forwards went prior to Bell. Bolden and Ogilvy went 36 and 37. Obviously, the position the Bulls really needed to fill was a wing.
And how are those guys working out? I haven't been paying attention to their...
Bolden hasn't played much for the 76ers. I think he might be on a two-way for their G League team. But Ogilvy has been very good for Boston. He's in their 10-man rotation for the most part.
Yeah.
So Ogilvy has worked out. And then I looked past the 38 pick, and I was kind of like, well, Dwayne Bacon went 40. He's somebody that we could have looked at. Somebody on Twitter mentioned Dylan Brooks as well. But, you know, they signed Felicio, mainly because of what you said. He has a big crowd following that, you know, loves Stacey King's El Toro calls, and you know, they fell into the trap, and the Bulls got their first positive approval rating on a player in a long time, and they misread the market. The cap didn't go up like it was supposed to, and teams didn't cash out giant deals for long term this year. It was the complete opposite. So they jumped into it way too quick, and they'll be the ones that pay for it, not us. So it kind of is what it is. It sucks that we got to watch him, but.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about for a second, you brought up Jordan Bell, because there are very few people in the world that were more high on Jordan Bell than me. I talked about him incessantly for a while. I thought he was the best defensive player I saw in college basketball last year, and he was just absolutely awesome in the NCAA tournament. But I think it's kind of gone a little, and even if you'll look at my Twitter feed, you can see, you know, how great of a pick it was, and I shortly find out, you know, he was traded. I'm still somewhat upset, but I do kind of understand it a little bit better. I don't think Jordan Bell would have been anywhere near as good on the Bulls, right? I mean, we're just not a good team right now. I still would have liked to seen him draft him, but make the case for why that taking Jordan Bell was the right idea.
Why taking Jordan Bell would have been the right idea?
No, why not? Why passing on him? Can you defend that decision?
I can defend having availability in roster spots that allowed us to pick Nawab up on waivers before anybody else, that allowed us to find somebody like Blakeney who was undrafted, that allowed us to pick up Pondexter and get a second-round pick for this year that we didn't have from New Orleans. It sucked. I was pissed off. Obviously, it was salt in the wounds after giving away our 16th pick. I wanted them to buy another pick from Philly because Philly had a plethora of second picks last year. I wanted them to get another second and get a big, like I said, so we didn't have to re-sign Felicio. So initially, I was upset like everybody else. I can't say that I knew a whole bunch about Jordan Bell at the time. So I wasn't ultimately upset about the choice, but I also understood initially that Bell wasn't who the Bulls would have picked. If he was who the Bulls wanted to pick, they wouldn't have sold the pick.
Yeah. No, you made a great point there, which I was not aware of. So you're saying if they would have taken Bell, they couldn't have gotten Nwaba.
Well, exactly. You only have so many roster spots for summer league, and then once you, after that, you have to cut it down for preseason, and then you have to cut it down again. So leaving the open roster spot allowed them to take on a contract, which they said was the reasoning for selling it. It sounded like a bunch of BS at the time because they hadn't done anything yet. But they got more cash with Pondexter as well as a second-round pick with the roster spot that could have been used for some random name player that we don't even know who they would have selected who could have been waived. So they were paid for a lottery chip, and they found alternative options that were free. 60 players go in the draft. You know how many players go undrafted that end up in the G League and do stuff like that? I have boxes and boxes of second-round picks that have never seen a minute in the NBA.
Agreed. Agree 100%. Everybody talks about, gets angry over trading second-round picks. I think I completely agree. I think it's totally ridiculous. The vast, vast majority of second-round picks are completely worthless. And if they're mainly trading chips, that's all they are. If you're trading a second-round pick to get an asset, I'm 100% behind it. You know, like, if it's, I don't understand why you think that that's going to be worthwhile, and I'm fine with trading second round picks as long as it's you're getting something in return that it's going to make you better.
Well, and I had somebody ask me, well, how come the Bulls didn't ask Golden State for a future second? Well, Golden State doesn't have their second this year, and they don't have their second in 2019, and this is also the second consecutive year that they've bought a second round pick in order to finish filling out their roster because they are in the luxury tax. They need players on minimum contracts from the second round to fill it out. Patrick McCaw is who they bought from Milwaukee last year in the second round for, I believe it was like $2.5 million. So they didn't even pay as much for McCaw, and McCaw played in the playoffs for them for every game but three, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and they're kind of forced in that situation just because they're paying so much to everyone else.
Every team is allotted $3 to $3.5 million to spend or sell or whatever that is when it comes to draft picks per year. That doesn't affect their cap situation. They paid $3.5 million for Jordan Bell, and his contract over 2 years is only worth $2.2 million. The Bulls are making more money than Jordan Bell made for selling it.
Yep. Yeah, but I also see the frustration from the fan base, right? You know, if this guy, like, because I was frustrated. Like, I think the guy has ability and talent, and we're a team that's rebuilding. It just it rubs you the wrong way that a team that's been first in attendance since 2010 is selling picks to get money. But when you put it that way, and they thought the roster shot was more important. You know, the only issue is, why is Pondexter on the roster? Why is Kay Felder on the roster? Why are some of these guys that just suck on the roster when you could have had a guy like Bell or another young player? Like, one thing I will say, I'm going to be furious when LaVine comes back, and if they decide they're going to cut Blankeney and keep Felder, what is the reason for that? You know,
I don't think that'll happen. Felder's on a non-guaranteed deal currently, so more than likely they will, you know, waive Felder and give Blakeney his guaranteed deal. But once again, it comes down to money. They're not going to give Blakeney a guaranteed deal until his 45 days are up.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point in them doing that. They have control of him however they want until those 45 days are used, and then they can cross that bridge.
Do you think he's played himself into that position?
I think he's played well enough, or at least showed enough for a 20-year-old kid that we should be looking to move Holiday. Like, we should have something lined up December 15th or lined up for the day that Zach is back. That's past December 15th. And I would have Blakeney as the backup shooting guard. You know, Holiday may pose potential for a contending team. He's got a great contract. It's super cheap. And keeping him past this year, next year he becomes an expiring contract. So then he's not really worth as much. So with somebody like Blakeney available, I'd look to move Holiday to have Blakeney develop, you know, 15, 20 minutes a game in that backup role.
Right. Agreed. What about going forward? I'd like to get your opinion on when Levine comes back. I say, so you, are you for, you probably say the move there is to cut Blakeney. I mean, cut Felder, bring him on board. I think this team is there's so many question marks about it right now that I don't see them getting considerably better to the point where you have to trade Lopez. Have you been thinking about that point going forward? I mean, do you feel like that trade needs to happen?
I think we need to get as many draft picks as we can. Just because if we have even two or three extra late first, right? Scenario, we trade Holiday and maybe Grant to a team for a little bit of cap and get a first, late first, maybe even a second, whatever. You get something for Holiday. He's not going to be as useful once Levine gets back. You try to strike something with the Cavs for Rolo, get a first there. If we can get up to two or three firsts, which should be possible, especially with Nico's contract and his trade imminent, he's a great cap dump. A team like the Knicks or the Lakers or somebody who's got a horrible contract has got to be salivating at the idea of getting Nikola Mirotic and just being able to cut him next year and cut, you know, $18, $19 million out of their books for the next 3 years. That alone is worth a late first, if not other assets. I want to get as many firsts as we can. This is going to be another deep draft. Try to trade up for somebody like Kevin Knox towards the end of the lottery, or even try to find the Kyle Kuzma and take a couple shots. I think those pieces would be more beneficial than Rolo, Holiday, or Nico, who are all at the max on 2 years deals and are going to only be here through next year. That's where I stand with that. I think moving anybody that isn't going to be here long term, that isn't going to be here for a 2020 playoff run, get what you can for them now so you can build on that.
Yeah, so you're for it. Are you at all concerned about the negative consequences of that trade for marketing development? I just feel like Lopez handles so much of dirty work that he doesn't have to. The team is completely lacking in toughness outside of him, outside of Lopez, that I feel like, especially on interior defense, they would just be manhandled to the point where I think it would have negative ramifications on marketing. I think marketing's kind of fallen in love with the fadeaway jumper all of a sudden, and you know, I don't think he's showing great shot selection all of a sudden on his three-pointers, which is kind of explains why he's had three bad games in a row. And I'm worried that it could really go south really quick if you're replacing Lopez with a Portis or, God, I mean, Felicio. Goodness gracious, your defense would be horrific.
Well, if we do it at the deadline and we made a trade with the Knicks and say took Noah's deal on for a pick or for Willie Hernan Gomez and Noah, something of that effect, you have a veteran that steps in then. Noah gets to retire a Bull. Obviously, we give up, you know, a large amount of cap that we could do free agency with, but if we're getting picks and young assets that are on cheap deals that'll expire around the same time Noah's does, it's really not a bad thing. And I think Lowry's the kind of kid and the kind of player, he's going to get better through adversity. Two-thirds of a season of adversity for him could actually end up helping him long-term. It could force him to get dirtier, get that grit, get upset, get mad, take more responsibilities on. Obviously, there is no denying how easy Rolo makes it for him on and off the floor. I don't think Lowry's averaging nearly a double-double without Rolo. He's probably got more around 5 rebounds a game instead of 7 or 8. But I don't think two-thirds of a season of adversity that's already going to be difficult, that we're already getting our ass kicked in nightly, is really going to hinder his development long-term. If anything, I think it would be a spark in him to push harder.
Gotcha. I hope you're right on that. I had serious reservations about trading Lopez for that major reason. And
If we don't get a first for Lopez, I don't want to do it. I would not trade Rowland for anything other than a late
on
first.
That we can agree. You know, I'm not about trading the kid for a second. Plus, I honestly feel that with a few smart signings, the Bulls are playoff bound next year. They draft the right guy in the top five, and they make a few smart signings. They're going to be good enough to make the playoffs, and this rebuild's over. We're going forward with this young core of, you know, Markkanen, LaVine, Dunn, and whoever we draft next year, and I'm fine with that. I'm definitely not about 5 years of just, you know, lottery picks. That's insanity.
You're not going to make your players happy. You're not going to get the kind of development you want. You're going to be in a Philadelphia situation where you have one of your top five picks sitting on the bench, has barely ever played for you. You traded your other one. Your recent one is currently injured. So out of the 6 years that you tanked, you got two people. That's a 1-in-3 shot. We picked the perfect year to tank. This draft class is...
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be almost impossible to miss in the top five.
Yeah.
Barring career-ending injuries for somebody in the top five, it is going to be hard to miss.
Agreed, 100%. I agree 100%. And, you know, the Porter injury is disappointing. And I think we talked about that in the last show, but there's so much talent at the top of this draft that, you know, even if you don't end up with Porter, you can end up with a transformational
player. Oh, I feel like
player.
Porter's injury is helping him. It ain't hurting his value. It's helping his value. There were questions about his athleticism. He's not on a big-name school. If he missed March Madness and he played the whole season, he'd be criticized for that. Can he win? Is he a leader? Now he's injured. He just gets to sit on his butt and work out and focus on his game after his surgery, and his value doesn't change. He's protected. Everybody has to go off his high school film and his All-American game.
Aren't you, though, it's still a back injury. That's just a major, major, oh, I mean.
Oh, I know better than anybody. I got 3 herniated discs in my neck. So I know all about how bad a spine injury can be. And if he's 20 years old and he's already getting sciatic nerve pain because he has a problem in his lower spine, that's not going to be good long term.
No. Not at all.
Chiropractors can help get you back in line. Surgeries can put Band-Aids on it. But spinal injuries are not things that can ever really 100% be fixed. Once they're there, they're there.
Agreed. All right, my man, Keith. I got to run. We got a wedding I got to head out to. But I really appreciate your participation in Chicago Bullseye, as always. Great, great stuff that you really... Definitely helped me to reconsider when I thought it was a disappointing Bell trade, but big picture, I'd rather have Nwaba. And if that's what it meant, to free up a roster spot for him, I'm on board, 100%.
Oh, no, exactly. Nwaba is the small forward version of Bell, and we needed a small forward, not a power forward or a center. So in that regard, it definitely worked out after the initial disappointment.
Before we go, one more question I just thought about. Considering the power forwards on this roster with Nico, do you want Nico still there in the long term? Do you think he's going to be there in the long term?
No. I think Nico was only signed to be traded. They were going to play him into a good season. That's why he was going to start over Markkanen initially. Try to get him to finish the season over 40% from three. 15 points a game, show that he's an asset that's worth having. And then they were going to move him once he didn't have his trade veto next year. Bobby punching him in the face really just kind of sped up the process. It's not like an amazing season was going to change Nico's value drastically. They still know who Nico is. He's not an unwritten book. He shoots threes. Some nights he's hot, some nights he's not. So now he's willing to veto a trade, and we don't have to wait till next year. I don't see Nico being here. He might not ever play another game as a Chicago Bull.
It's an interesting take. I kind of hope so. I mean, I think he's a nice guy. I just think he's a terrible basketball player. He's got skills, and he's just never – but he's only probably averaged one out of every good five games, you know, and the other four he's just been absolutely horrific. So
except for March.
Yeah, except for March, exactly. And then he probably
maybe he should shave his beard and change his name and go sneak into the college tournament yearly and help somebody out there.
But to me, what matters most is how you play in the playoffs. He's had now a pretty significant run in the playoffs, over 300 minutes, over, you know, 19 or so games, and he's just been horrible. And that's going to always stay with me. You know, and he's not like he's, he should be in his prime right now. It's not like he's 18 years old. And he's, I just don't see the improvement. So, Keith, looking forward to having you on again.
Hey, man. We'll do it again next week. You have a good time at the wedding.
Thanks, brother.